Hello and welcome to Outdoor Lives podcast. My name is Mike Rain, author of Nature of Snowdonia. The podcast, and the forthcoming Mountain Leader, that'll be out in spring, I think, all being well. This podcast is free to air, ad-free and music-free. You can find out more about me and my workshops and e-learning modules at mikerain.co.uk. But we're not here to talk about me today, we're here to meet our guest, which this week is Nick Livesey. You may have come across Nick before. He's a photographer, author and mountain leader. And Nick's journey to Wales has been covered well in the past as somebody who changed their life, moved to Snowdonia for a better life, and perhaps left a few demons behind in the process. We're not going to go back over that. That's been covered before. What we're going to talk about is how things are today and what Nick is up to since he left the Shabbard Calf, and a steady job and a home to live in just before lockdown. Perhaps not the best time to leave a job, but that's what Nick did. So Nick joins me today and we're sitting in his house, which is the oldest house in Caplacurig. It's a dark, damp, beautiful cottage in a beautiful place. Nick, how are you today?
I'm very well, Mike. It's lovely to welcome you here to this little mountain hovel.
It is. You can feel the history in this room of who has lived here before for several hundred years, I would imagine.
Yeah, well, I think it's about 300 years old.
Yeah.
But it's a lovely home and it's very welcoming. It hasn't got any bad feelings, yeah. You know, any hostility in it. It's a friendly house.
And the location is fantastic. I mean, this is really quiet, isn't it? People often say to me, oh gosh, you know, it must be busy living in Snowdonia. It's pretty concentrated at the crowds, aren't they?
Absolutely. I mean, from my window now, I can see the A5 and it's probably about half a mile away.
Yeah.
But I can't hear it and there's no right of way through this farm either.
Yeah.
So apart from the occasional D of E group getting lost, I don't see anybody here and it's fantastic for a recluse such as myself.
Yeah, it's a good spot, Nick. So, obvious question is, how do you end up here, Nick? You know, one minute you're in the cafe, next you're living in a fantastic old cottage. What happened?
Well, I was living in the flat of Cafe Shabbard, and I think I was there 7 years. And obviously I worked at the cafe as well, so I felt like I was living in a fishbowl, you know. And I came down with health anxiety really severely, and I was quite ill for about 18 months. And then I went on a holiday to Bron Abbey, the holiday cottages.
Oh, yeah.
And I had 4 days there, and at the end of the fourth day, I rang them up and said, can I have 5 more days?
Yeah.
And I started to feel so much better out there. And I realised that I just needed to get some separation between, you know, the work and life.
Yeah.
So a friend of mine had this cottage. She was the tenant. But she wanted to go and live on a canal boat and do constant cruising. So she said, will you come and just look after me house indefinitely? I'll probably not be coming back to live there, but I'm not 100% sure yet. So I came up here to have a look and I thought, blimey, it is absolutely amazing and a dream location.
Good.
So I jumped straight on it. It was brilliant.
Good, that's good. So you must have stashed up a bit of cash behind you to make that dream come true, to be able to live in this sort of place, Nick. Is that the case? Or
not at all. It's very cheap. The rent here is very cheap because it's quite dilapidated. As you said, it's quite damp. And I'm a good tenant because I don't hassle the landlord.
Great.
You know, if something needs doing, I'm not going to hassle them too badly because I'm getting a good deal here. But I did make a few quid off my last book.
Yeah.
But when you write your first book, you get a lot of money, relatively speaking, of course. And I thought, this is me. This is it now.
Mm.
I'm going to have grands in the bank forever. It's just going to keep rolling in. And then once I bought too many Paramo clothes and all sorts of other extravagances and it sort of dried up a bit.
Yeah.
You know, so no, we're not got any money, but us in this kind of lifestyle, we don't have money, do we?
No, we don't. We don't choose that, do we? And I know being an author isn't a profitable business. For most of us anyway, I think there's one or two do all right out of it, but not for us. But it helps put you in the shop window. So what else do you do to go with that? How else do you make what other services do you offer apart from selling the book?
Well, I sell photographic prints. I also do photographic workshops of varying varieties, you know. And what else do we do? I'm a mountain leader, of course. I run a small little guiding company called Discover Secret Snowdonia. And my speciality is taking people to really quiet places where they're going to get in touch with something deeper than the acquisitive side of bagging the 3,000 as, or, you know, something that's really going to give them something special. Unfortunately, most of my work is on Snowdon, but that's the way it goes, you know.
Yeah, Snowdon's a big draw, isn't it? But I really like what you're doing with Secret Snowdonia. It's a wonderful thing, and there's so many wonderful quiet places to go here. But it's just drumming up the business, isn't it? It's how you get to the market. I don't know how you do that more effectively.
Well, I try. Say somebody wants me to take them up Trevan or Snowdon, I'll say, you know, if you want to come and do this again, let me take you to somewhere a little bit different, yeah, a little bit quieter, where you're going to get the exercise, you're going to get the views, but you're also going to get something really special. Because for me, the mountains were always about healing. And they were about showing me how transient I was, which is very, very good. You know, getting rid of that ego is really important to being happy, I think.
Yeah.
And I just like being away from it all.
Yeah. And if you go to a Rhwydfa, you're not getting away from it all, are you?
Absolutely not. I mean, most people listening to this will know what a circus it is up there. Especially at the weekends.
I actually think there's a new attraction up there, though, watching the queue.
Yeah.
It's quite entertaining going and seeing the queue on Snowdon.
You can go up there, you know, watch the punch-ups.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's the nearest we get to going to town, isn't it?
I remember seeing somebody go up the wrong set of stairs and about 150 people all chanting, join the queue, join
really?
The queue, yeah.
Wow.
It's bizarre.
Yeah, I do like the way people just stop at the back of the queue and just do what's expected. It's amazing.
It is.
But that's not what we're about, is it? We want to go to different places. So have you got some favourite places? No, you can't tell us where your favourite places are. Can you describe your favourite places without giving the location away?
Well, yes, some of the...
Actually, Nick, nobody's going to go there anyway, are they?
Very few do, but no, I think my all-time favourite range, and it's taken me a fair time to get to know it well, is the Hrynogydd.
Yeah.
I adore the Hrynogydd. Yeah. There's just something primeval about it. Obviously, the vegetation is very different. There's not much grazing apart from the goats, so it's covered in heather.
Yeah.
It's, is it Cambrian gritstone?
Yes, it is. Cambrian gritstone, that's right, yeah.
So obviously it's a completely different feel. And you've got these amazing gritstone pavements on the quieter parts.
Yeah.
Where you've got perched boulders. I won't call them erratics because that's a term that's erroneously used sometimes, isn't it?
It's an interesting term because the dictionary definition is a rock that's been moved from its bedrock to another place.
Yeah, yeah.
So sometimes in Snowdonia that can be quite a short distance. But how they're classified in the Hrynogydd, I'm not sure, because it's that gritstone for quite a long way, isn't it?
I think it's end to end. Yeah. I think it's from Barmouth to, you know, the Dwyrain Estuary, really.
It is.
But
there's some edge bits, the shales and things, the Harlech series, I think, where the manganese resides.
The manganese, which is sort of round about Moyleskavad Nogod.
Yeah. Yeah,
and it's great because you've got a seam of manganese and on top of it is the gritstone.
That's it.
And there's loads of it, and it's like going to an undiscovered peatland crag.
Yeah, it is.
You know, it makes me want to put my rock shoes on again and do a bit of new routing.
Oh, the gritstone's fantastic in the Hrynogydd, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
When I was climbing, though, I didn't go there very much because it's such a long drive and then such a long walk.
And the climbing's a bit poo as well, isn't it?
Well, the climbing was good, Nick, but short. Just really short. So, whilst I really enjoyed the routes I did, they were very small for the journey.
Yeah, I suppose the only... There's a couple on Dyfwys which are longer, but that's quite a vegetated north-facing crag. Yeah. You've got the southwest ridge of Hrynogfach, which was an old Shoel Styles route.
Yeah.
And at the time, before Tremadog was developed, it was the only climb in between Snowdon and Cadair Idris.
Wow, that's amazing. We went up the other week at the west side of Hrynogfawr from Coed Crafnant, which was a place I hadn't been up before, and that was fascinating. Nobody around, more of these manganese mines and wonderful primeval temperate rainforest, you know, really quite special.
Yes, it's a very special area, but there are other places I really like too. I mean, because I like all types of different types of walking, you know. I like rocky ridges, I like scrambling, and I also like hands in the pockets just bowling along for miles on end. So you've got things like the Tarrans or the Dovey Hills.
Oh, yeah, they're quiet, aren't they?
Yeah, or the Eastern Arans.
Yeah.
All very, very quiet places, but great walking country with a great sense of spaciousness. And
some of them quite tough when you go off the path, aren't they? Certainly the Hrynogydd's tough when you go off the path, but some of those other places are quite heather tussocks, not heather tussock, tussock grass, purple moor grass.
Yeah, that can be really, really, really hard work.
Hard work, isn't it?
In terms of the Hrinogid, I would always say if you find a path in the Hrinogid, follow it, even if it's not going the way you want to go.
Yeah.
Just do not get off path. I mean, I remember once I stumbled into a rut of goats. It was about September.
Oh, yeah.
And it was terrifying but incredible. They were not interested in me, but it was bedlam.
Yeah.
So on the way back, I decided I would go another way.
Yeah.
And I thought, this looks good on the map. Ended up seeing some cows, which I didn't like.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, right, I'm just going to... I'm not too far from the car, so I went off path. And I had about three hours of hell.
Gosh.
Cumnant Col is one of the darkest places I've ever been. And to be blundering around there, you know, free range heather bashing is just not fun at all.
Yeah.
But you learn your lesson, don't you?
I tell you, one of the things I did notice being in Hrinogith the other day was the amount of heather. And currently in Scotland and the north of England, there's quite a lot of conversations around the muir burn, isn't there? Burning off the old heather. Principally to create food source for grouse, for driven grouse shoots.
Yeah.
But they also argue they need to burn the heather to reduce the fuel load for so-called wildfires. I always say so-called wildfires because they're all started by people, they're not wild. But the Hrinogs, that's heather everywhere, isn't it? So should somebody be burning the load off in the Hrinogs, do you think?
I would be absolutely... Oh, I would go mad if they did that. The whole thing of the Hrinog, to me, is to leave it exactly how you find it.
Yeah.
You know, to me, it's sacrosanct.
Yeah.
Because it's one of the least spoiled places.
Yeah.
You know, people, you know, Instagrammers thinking they're in the wilderness when they're going into the Carnedhai. You know, it's an ecological desert.
Yeah.
I did a wild camp with a client just above Llyn Morwynion about 6 months ago. And when I awoke in the morning, I was amazed at the sounds. It was teeming with life.
That's good.
And I've bivvied out all around here many, many times.
Yeah.
And you don't really hear much.
No.
There's nothing about.
Yeah.
We have all kinds of birds.
Yeah.
There was everything going on.
You've just got a few more trees, haven't you? You know, a lot of the outcrops have got trees on, and you could probably have more, actually, there, if they reduce grazing even more. That would be great.
But well, if you look at places like Cumbuchan, there's lots of trees.
There's lots of ancient woodland. It's nice. I suppose it illustrates around the edges of mountains is often the best place to be as well, rather than on the summits. I do like some of the edge walks we do.
I do, and I'm getting more and more into that as I'm getting older, especially in terms of photography. I prefer shooting from below the mountains now than I actually do from the top of them.
Yeah, we've seen all the views, haven't
we? Yeah, the big vistas, they're quite impressive, but there's... You know, when you're wandering around the valleys, you're going to find little nooks and crannies and incredibly beautiful little places that you wouldn't stumble upon usually.
You do. Just as we back up to your house here, is proper Atlantic rainforest. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Full of mosses and lichens and old trees. It's really nice. And that will be full of birdsong in the spring in particular.
Yeah. Well, I spend a lot of time out the back.
Yeah.
On a large area of moorland below Shabbard called Kevin Glass.
Oh, yeah.
And there's all sorts, hawthorns, birch.
Yeah.
It's hard going, you know, but it's really, really rewarding. Because I find, like, scenes that no one's really seen before.
Yeah.
And also, it's in terms of the ecology, the peat out there is incredible.
Oh, yeah.
It's some of the deepest peat beds in Snowdonia.
Wow.
They go to about 7 metres deep.
How do you know that?
Because I probed them.
Wow, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
That's really good. And is that intensively farmed? I mean, how's that managed? Is it accidentally like that, or has it been made like that?
Well, the funny thing is, it used to be more of a wetland, but the farmer was paid to dry it out.
Oh, yeah.
He's now being paid to restore it to what it was. So, you know, in much the same way as what they did on the Miganite.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There are some old roads up there, aren't there, on this moor above the house. Are they to do with the quarrying, or...?
Well, the road directly outside mine, which takes you out the back, that was built about 20 years ago.
Oh, really?
So although it looks like an old quarry road to link up to the Rose Quarry, it's relatively new. But there is a track, the continuation of that, that goes to Dolwyth Elan. It looks really good on the map, but it just stops.
Yeah, yeah, I've been on there. Because it's not a public right of way either, is it?
No.
But
it is access land.
Oh, is it access land when you get to the top? So it's quite off the beaten track, isn't it? So you do mention something there about trying to get the photographs. Is there a dilemma between finding a brilliant photograph and publicising it and then other people wanting to come and take the same photograph? Is that an issue that you've come across?
Absolutely. And when doing the book, there were certain walks where I really tortured myself thinking, should I put this in there?
Yeah.
But if I think it's a sensitive place, which I don't want trashing,
yeah,
I'll be quite vague in my description. I just won't tell people where it
okay,
is.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
But we've seen with the advent of Instagram, people want the big banging shots, and areas are starting to suffer for it. They really are. You can see it.
It seems still very concentrated, though, doesn't it? The walking path pools or the...
Yeah.
The so-called infinity pool in the Samaritan's Pass keeps cropping up, doesn't it?
Well, the infinity pool made me laugh because, you know, you often see in summer, you see bikini-clad girls going up there and they're getting through the bracken and you're thinking, it's going to be Lyme season, you know, they're gonna, there's going to be an epidemic of lovely young ladies with Lyme's disease.
Yeah. It's not, I mean, it's not even deep enough to lie down in, really, is it?
No. But again, that all came about, the infinity pool, because a local photographer put it on Facebook.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I did wonder how it started. I mean, same with the walking path. Some influencer must have been up there to take the pictures, to kick the ball off.
Yeah, and the reach of social media now.
Yeah.
You know, it spreads like wildfire, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. So, social media... Phew. Force for good or a force for evil?
Well, I'm addicted to it. I'll admit that now. I'd spend far too much time on it, and it is useful to me. But I think my life was just fine without it.
I don't think
you know, I was missing anything.
But so do you find, I mean, I know I do this. I use it for business. I use it to communicate to people. But I stay on it too long and I wander off places that I don't really need to be going. And
yeah, well, it's a rabbit hole, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Before you know it, you're looking at all kinds of strange things.
Yeah, and we generally don't mean rude things, do we? I was watching some wonderful YouTube videos the other day on footpaths that disappear and things. It was great. You know, somebody done a really good job on these videos. If I could remember the names, I'd give them a push. But... Keith Hulse often argues it's the social media that's changed things. It's only the last 5, maybe 7 years that Snowdon's been as busy as it is.
Yeah, I've lived here 9.5 years now, and it's got busier year on year. But I think the lockdown situation changed everything as well.
Were you locked down here, Nick?
Yeah, I loved it. It was one of the best periods of my life because it was spring.
Yeah,
and I was on furlough, and it was the first time that I'd actually got to watch nature uninterruptedly.
Yeah,
and it was one of the most beautiful times of my life. I adored it.
Yeah, we were very lucky in lockdown to be here. I mean, we both know what it's like living in the city, and we do sympathise with people who were living there. But here, it was a magical time, wasn't it?
It really was, and a lot of the old locals told me it was like going back to the 50s.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we did things as a community. Obviously, we kept our distance.
Yeah.
But we'd go around litter picking.
Yeah.
We got a load of litter picking kit. I did the back lane here.
Yeah.
You know, Sian Ashton was involved, of course,
great,
because she's a big...
Yeah.
A big mover and shaker around here.
Yeah.
But it was great. It was absolutely beautiful.
So you got to know neighbours, you got to see people that you might not have seen otherwise.
Well, this atmosphere of people wanting to help each other,
we
suddenly became very concerned about each other.
Yeah.
And if someone was going to the shops, you'd get hold of your neighbour and say, do you need anything? And it really, and we're all nice to each other around here anyway, but it made it all the more so. And we were concerned if, you know, if people didn't have enough food or whatever it was, we were all helping each other.
Have we moved away from that since lockdown?
No, but I think Capel's one of them places. It's just a lovely place to live.
Yeah.
And if your face fits, and that's, you know, an important consideration in a Welsh village.
Yeah, you've got to get on with people.
It doesn't work for some people moving to a place like this. They stay 1 year, they can't integrate, or they can't handle the winters, and they disappear.
Yeah.
But some of us, we end up staying because it works for us.
I do think it's an underrated village. If you forget the mountains, the woods and the river and... The other areas around the village are really beautiful, aren't they? They're sort
really
of circular
are.
Walks, fantastic.
Yeah. Well, I did a photography project in lockdown, which was exploring just the kilometre around this house, and I find loads of new places. And looking out my window now, I'm looking at the Gwydir Forest.
Yeah.
Full of beautiful lakes.
Yeah, it is.
I can walk straight onto Shabbard. I mean, if I was feeling energetic, I could walk into the Ogwen Valley.
Yeah.
It's not that far, so it's got a hell of a lot to offer.
It's nice.
The Figwy is a beautiful river as well.
It is gorgeous. The paddlers really like it. It's quite nice and varied.
Yeah.
And there's not too much stress with fishing people on it. You did some videos in lockdown, didn't you? How have they gone? Have they been well received?
Yeah, nobody said anything bad about them. I had a lot of positive feedback, and it was a 10-part series called Lockdown in Snowdonia. One of them was about your book.
Yeah, yeah.
The Nature of Snowdonia. I covered so many different things. I followed the Figwy to its source on one. I went over to Nithbran over there, the old house.
Oh, yeah. What was the book called about Nithbran?
Take Not Our Mountain.
Take Not Our Mountain.
By Dorothy Campion.
Yeah, another interesting book for people to read.
Very interesting.
Mm.
And I also got talking to people that know other stories that aren't included in the book.
I bet there's a few of them.
And apparently the gentleman, Way Campion,
yeah,
he shot himself in there.
Oh, that's so terrible, isn't it?
It's said that the place is cursed.
Yeah.
And I had a very uncanny experience up there.
Yeah.
So, it was really fun learning a new skill set.
Yeah.
Learning Premiere Pro, thinking about putting films together, you know, storyboarding. And the other thing was, because in a previous life I was a musician, I was a professional musician.
Yeah.
And I gave that up for about 15 years.
Wow.
And then for my films, I started composing, and I set up a little studio. And now I like to play guitar every night.
Mm.
And one of my main things is I like to compose orchestral cinematic music.
Gosh.
So it's been great.
Are you still making films then, Nick?
Last one I made was back in January, and I really want to make more, but they're a lot of work.
Yes.
And they spoil a good walk.
Yeah, yeah.
And the walking's really important to me.
Yeah, I suppose it's a bit like podcasting. Anybody with a camera can make a film now, but to make a good film takes a lot of time and effort, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
It's that thing where you have to walk ahead and put the camera down and walk back and then walk past the camera and then walk back and get a camera and walk back on again. And God, I haven't got the patience to do that.
It's enormously contrived as well.
Yeah.
You know, but
but the good ones do look good.
Oh, they do, and with drone stuff these days. It's just incredible what you can do in a small room like this.
It is.
You can make an industry-standard film, write industry-standard music. You're bypassing all the gatekeepers.
Wow.
I used to work in a recording studio, and it used to be about £300 a day to hire it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that counts a lot of people out.
Yeah.
These days you don't need to go in. Most records now, they're in rooms like this.
Wow.
You know, unless amazing. You need to record a big orchestra or live drums or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, it's really egalitarian.
Yeah.
So our creative side's free to flourish. The only limit is our imagination, isn't it?
It is. And I do see quite a bit of poor films as well. I don't know. I guess there's no quality control. You just do it and put it out.
Yeah, yeah. But a lot of it, if you're talking about YouTube, it's not necessarily the quality of the output, the content, as it were. It's the personality of the person doing it.
Yeah.
Some people are just very likable, regardless of, you know, how good their stuff is.
It's really interesting, that, isn't it? When you watch one and the person presenting it is a good talker, and they can be quite magnetic, can't they?
Yeah, some people just got a lot of charisma, haven't they?
If you met them in real life, you might not like them, but they really come across well, don't they? Whereas other people you might really like.
Yeah. Well, I've met lots of them in the photography world.
Yeah.
And we do collaborations. And often when I meet them in real life, they're nothing like they are on camera.
They just turn it on.
Yeah. Some of them are like really square.
Yeah.
And boring. But when you meet them, they're a really good laugh.
Yeah. Yeah, it is interesting. I've done a little bit of TV work, and those people who do present on TV, it is a special skill they've got. It is a knack that they can turn on.
Yeah, it's not easy to do if you're uncomfortable with it.
Not at all, no. Mountain leading, though, Nick, that's what you're doing a lot of the time. What sort of mountain leading are you doing?
Well, like I said before, it's mainly on Snowdon.
Yeah, yeah.
I do Snowdon probably about 50 times a year at the moment.
Yeah.
It's not really what I would prefer to be doing.
No.
But that said, I'm always happy to do it.
Yeah. Hey, there's worse things to do than walk up Snowdon for a living, isn't
there? Yeah, you could work in a cafe. Try that for 7 years and see how you get on. But the thing about Snowdon and the beauty of... I mean, it's a fabulous mountain. one of the finest, if really not the finest on the British mainland.
Yeah.
And that's a hill I'm prepared to die on.
Yeah.
You know, it's got everything.
Yeah, it has, yeah.
It's got all the crags, you know, Cloggy, Llywedd, the history which is attached to them.
Yeah.
It's got every sort of grade of scrambling. In winter, it's got every type of...
It's brilliant.
You know, it's got something for everybody.
And because it was a very industrial place one time, wasn't it?
It was, yeah, the Snowdon Copper Mine. And
it's only 100 years ago and it would have been full of working people.
Yeah, absolutely. I was out with Keith Hulse not so long ago, and he's a bit of a specialist, isn't he?
He's done well on that, hasn't he?
He has, and he was explaining to me, and we were in we were beside Glaslyn.
Yeah.
And he was talking about all these overhead tramway type things, and which I was trying to visualise it, and you can actually see the scars on the landscape. Once you know they're there, you can see that there's been activity in the past.
It all tells a story, doesn't it? I do a workshop with Keith Hulse, Snowdon from Outleaders, and we cover a lot of that stuff, and it is absolutely fascinating. And it's quite different from the Glider Eye in that sense, isn't it? And the Caledonia, there's much less industry on those other hills. Snowdon in particular, and particularly with the copper mines, was a busy place, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It was. We get these wonderful apocryphal tales about children wandering into the copper mines at Flipping Glaslyn and coming out at Clogwyn Cork or something.
Yeah, there's plenty of stories about those mountains. I love them. I love them. Is that a range of groups that you're taking? You know, is it the old charity walks, or is it people who just want to go up Snowdon?
A lot of them are charity walks. Most of them are charity walks.
Yeah.
There's the odd private client. And sometimes I would advise them not to hire me.
Yeah.
I'm like, really? You're going to pay me 120 quid? I feel bad taking it, because you can do it yourself. You know, you don't need me. Yeah. What I'd rather do is you can pay me money and I'll take you out on a navigation day.
Yeah.
And try and give you some independence. Yeah. But the large charity events, they cause me a great deal of cognitive dissonance.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm 100% against them.
Mm.
For many reasons. But I've got to earn money. If I don't take that job, someone else is going to, and I need to pay my rent.
Mm.
But on a more positive note, you're seeing people from inner cities who have never been to a place like this before.
Mm.
More often than not, they're completely blown away.
Mm.
Not the most interesting place for me to be. But I tend to always be at the back with the stragglers.
Yeah, yeah.
So you really bond with them over a day.
Yeah.
And you're working out how to encourage them, because some people need carrots, some need stick.
Yep.
It's hard work for them, you know.
It is.
And it's really rewarding when you get them to the top and back down safely again, and they can't thank you enough because you've given them something priceless.
Yeah. I think what interested me working, I've only done a little bit. I did one with you last year, I think, or this year, I can't remember when.
Yeah.
And it wasn't so much that people from different ethnic backgrounds, it's that they'd lived urban lives.
Yeah.
And they just...
They're completely disconnected, aren't they?
Yeah.
They can't even walk on uneven surfaces.
No. And that's due to living in a very built-up area with streetlights and tarmac for the entirety of their lives.
Yes. Yeah.
These weren't stupid people, these were solicitors and teachers and students, you know, but they just had no experience of being in that area at all. So I was glad they were out there, but yeah, it is, you are torn, aren't you?
Very much so, very much so. I don't know what the answer is.
I really don't. And they're always going to come to Snowdon, aren't they?
They are, because, especially charity, because people know what Snowdon is.
Yeah.
Even if they've never been, they can identify it. It's a big mountain, everybody knows it.
So is the issue on Snowdon there are too many people, or is it that we haven't catered for that number of people? Is it that we haven't got the infrastructure? Is it that we're not investing in the footpaths? The footpaths are falling to bits. Should there be bigger car parks? Should there be, I don't know, electric buses delivering people there? You know, should we try and cater for the numbers that are going there, or do we limit those numbers?
That's a really tough question, because... In terms of the transport, we do need that looking at, and that has improved a lot.
Yeah.
But in terms of numbers, I'm a great believer that the mountains are all about freedom.
Mm.
And that's freedom to go and do Crib Goch in winter in Crocs. I don't think we should be starting to police.
No.
The last place that we can really exercise our freedoms,
because
they're being rapidly taken from us.
Yeah.
In terms of infrastructure, I don't think... We should be destroying the things that we come to see.
Yep.
It's a balancing act, isn't it?
It really is.
So you've got a very, very difficult conundrum there, haven't you?
And some of the footpaths do need some investment. I don't know where that money's coming from. It seems slightly absurd to me that we resurface the tarmac road to Snowdon all the way from wherever you want to be in the country, and that's an immaculate surface, but we don't seem to be able to find any money to tidy up the footpath on Snowdon. That just seems to be a disconnect to me.
Absolutely, yeah, there's a lot of mess up there. I mean, going up to Cuckoo Green Station, it's about 30 metres wide now. But what I think would be a very good idea, now, am I right in thinking that on Ben Nevis there was some kind of permit thing for charity walks that they've just introduced?
I mean, Snowdonia do ask, and I think Legacy, they do ask at the big events, get in touch with the National Park beforehand. But exactly how they're managing that, I'm not sure, because they are so short of staff. You know, Snowdonia has one access officer who's trying to do everything.
Yeah.
They're underfunded,
aren't
they?
I would be in favour of having strict guidelines on the number of charity events on the mountain per year.
Yeah.
And they get given out on a first-come, first-served basis. Yeah. That would mean I would lose money.
Yeah.
But that hill is getting smashed.
It is getting smashed. And it is
the toilet
issue. Oh, come
when
on,
I'm with
Nick.
Clients, we all know the best place is to go to the toilet on Snowdon. And if my clients need the toilet, I have to stress to them, before you do anything, look around so you're not going to step in anything or put your hand in anything.
Yeah.
And it's a massive issue. It's disgusting.
Do you think there should be toilets on Snowdon?
Well, I mean, if you've got Halfway House there, the Halfway Caff, why not have a couple of portaloos there?
Mm.
Why not?
They do it in other places, don't they? I was amazed in America. I went up Long's Peak. A lot of people there. Maybe not as busy as Snowdon, but a lot of people. It was lines of people. And halfway up, there are toilets there. Which, now, here's the tricky bit. Those toilets were emptied by helicopter. So somebody has to pay to empty the toilet. And I think that's one of the issues on Snowdon, because the National Park are dead set against toilets on there, because they just don't know who's going to manage it, how it's going to pan out.
Well, they need to make more of an effort, I think, to resolve that issue.
Yeah.
Because it's revolting.
It is, it is.
And it's
really
a health
bad.
Hazard.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's lots of people wild camping now. People that wouldn't usually wild camp. Now, I went down to see Henry Williams at Gwenngorf Isaf years ago. And I said, Henry, can I leave the car here tonight? I'm going to go camping up by Casseg Fraith.
Yeah.
And he said, no, you can't. I don't want you up there. And I'm like, Henry, it's me.
Yeah.
It's me, mate. I'm not going to do anything. He said, no, absolutely not. Because his water source was contaminated and there was fecal matter in his water on a number of occasions when he got it tested, because people are camping in the same places, you know, and the human waste is all concentrated in a small area.
Is that because of the numbers of people? Is that because people have poor toileting habits?
I think it'd be a bit of both, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, if you're a little bit savvy, you know what to do, don't you?
Yeah.
Just get it buried far away from the water, you know. It's not rocket science.
Yeah.
But again, you're talking about honeypots.
Yeah.
And, you know, the effects of social media. And we're also living in a post-expert age. So you've got this new breed of hiker, they call it now. I came into hill walking and mountaineering through a mountaineering club.
Mm.
And I became really interested in the history. You know, from O.G. Jones, Whymper, all the way through to, you say, Dave McLeod or Uli Steck.
Yeah.
The whole thing. And the traditions and the terminology.
Yeah.
All of it was of great interest to me. Now people are coming into it with no knowledge or interest in these traditions.
Yeah.
So they're behaving in ways which aren't always good for the mountains or the environment.
So no grounding, is there?
Yeah, and nobody cares, because people like me now are seen as old farts.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because we've got these social media influencers. And that's what people, that's their first introduction to the outdoors, is through these people. Not crusty old farts like me.
And those are the people they ask for advice, aren't they?
It is, and it's not always good advice.
Oh, we say, I think there's some sort of saying that a bloke's experience if he's done something once.
Yeah.
And he'll give you advice on that. I remember doing an interview for BBC Radio Wales when Google did their footpath, photographing the footpath up Snowdon. Google Eye, isn't
it? Yeah,
And was desperate to make the point that that's not a live video stream. That was filmed on a day. And looking at Google Eye doesn't tell you what the conditions are like on Snowdon. It just tells you what it was like on the day they took the film. So that, Which to us just seems so flipping obvious. I don't know how we get those messages across, do
I
we?
Don't know. I was appalled last Saturday. And again, I'd like to stress, I'm not the mountain police.
No.
You're free to do what you want. You're free to allow the Flamberis Mountain Rescue Team to shovel you into a bucket. You know, that's entirely up to you. But I was on Snowdon with a large group on Saturday, and we knew at the start we weren't going to reach the top.
Yeah.
We had a little break at Bulchmorgh.
Yeah.
And there must have been 50 to 100 people scrambling up Crieb Goch.
Wow.
And we've got 50-mile-an-hour winds and stronger gusts.
Oh, for goodness sake.
And it was absolutely lashing it down.
Oh.
We got our lot up to the miners' track,
yeah.
And on our way down, we saw several of the Flamberis vehicles coming up, people carrying stretchers up. Oh. There was 3 separate incidents on the mountain that day.
You can't tell me why people have detached themselves from common sense. I mean, one of the things that puzzles me on Snowdon is it's people go there because it's the highest mountain, and there's some clues there, aren't there?
Yes.
Highest mountain. Yeah. And if they haven't heard of Crieb Goch and the exposure up there, what, I don't know what we can do.
You've just got to let Darwinism take its course, maybe.
Well, true.
I'm not in favour of having people stood at the bottom of hills. Maybe somebody advising.
Yeah.
But I don't think you can forcefully do it. And the other thing as well, you can't shout at people and call them names. They're not going to listen to you. There's no dialogue then, is there? You've got to try and put your ideas across in with a bit of humility. And it's a really difficult one, even with clients. Sometimes I have to get heavy with them.
Yeah.
Because they're just not listening.
Yeah.
But you can't physically manhandle people, can you?
You can't criticise a man's driving. That's another old saying.
Oh, absolutely,
isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But the facts are, numerically, Snowdon's still really safe, isn't it?
Yes.
Given the numbers that are going up there, which I believe is up to 800,000
now. 800 now, 800,000. About 600. Blimey.
Yeah. I think that was last year's number was 800,000. And of course, they all come down as well. So, you know, you've got 1.5 million people movements on the mountain.
Yeah.
Snowdon Mountain Rescue Team are doing 200. Well, they've done 200 rescues already this year, so they'll do a few more. But out of that number, that's not very many, is it?
No, not in terms of percentage. It's probably very low.
Though if you're a volunteer in the Flamberis Mountain Rescue Team, that's 4 a week. So, yeah. You know, that's not so good, is it? But it actually isn't dangerous hill walking, really, numerically.
No, it's not. Although I think you'll find that the records suggest that more hill walkers are injured than climbers.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that's a percentage thing, you know. There's a lot less climbers than there are hill walkers, of course.
Climbing accidents are pretty rare, actually. But they can be messy. That's true.
Well, it's one of those things, isn't it? If you get it wrong, you'll get it really wrong.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm surprised there aren't more turned ankles on Snowdon, you know.
Yeah.
There's a lot of places you can slip and trip, and
we've probably both
slipped and tripped at some point. I guess we learn to slip and trip in the right place, and is that the job of a mountain leader, to make sure people slip and trip in the right place, not the wrong place?
Yeah, well, a lot of it is positioning yourself as well, isn't it? You know, there's a couple of little bits where you might not fall far, but you could potentially hurt yourself.
Yeah, definitely.
You just put a barrier in front of them.
So social media is an issue. What other issues are there in the mountains?
I don't know, but obviously littering is bad. I want you to come on to that because there's something I wanted to show you. Obviously littering, it's not a new thing. What I've got here in my hands is a Top Deck lemonade shandy can. And I found this on Snowdon South Ridge a year or two ago.
Yeah.
And I've done a lot of Googling and it's about from 1984.
Good grief.
So it's been sat behind a rock since 1984 at least.
And would that be an example of placed litter?
It looks like it because it was one of those ones where you go for a wee.
Yeah.
And it's stuffed deep in a crevice. I'm like, what's that? That looks old.
It hasn't blown there, has it? Somebody's put it
there. I don't think it could have been blown there, no.
And that's still happening. If you pick up a stone, you'll usually find something.
Yeah, and you did lots of experiments with biodegradability, didn't you? And as you can hear, this can is still very solid.
Is that 40 years? Not far off, is it?
Yeah, it's about that, isn't it? It's getting on for that.
I don't know how long a can takes. It's thousands, isn't it?
Yeah. But something I'd like to say, all these problems we have in the hills, they used to make me very cross and very upset.
Mm.
You know, these places mean everything to me. But life's too short.
Mm.
One man can't take all that on his shoulders.
No.
You've got to choose your battles, and sometimes you've got to let things go.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you know, you'd be outraged. Yeah. You spend your whole life outraged.
It's certainly a joy getting out with people who are keen and committed and sharing some of the things you've learned about those places, isn't it? It really is uplifting, I find.
Yeah, very much so.
Do you get to other mountain areas much, Nick? Do you go on holiday to Scotland or the lakes or anywhere, or do you just stay in Snowdonia?
Well, before I moved to Snowdonia, I used to go to Scotland several times a year, the same as the Lake District. I used to climb in the peak most weekends in the summer. But since I came here, I've not wanted to go back. And what that is I've got no interest in being a tourist.
Yeah.
I want to know places intimately.
Yeah.
That's where I get most of my satisfaction. Yeah. Bagging is not really where I'm at.
Yeah.
You know, I haven't done Anchelach.
Yeah.
I haven't done Leagarch. Yeah. I haven't done Ben Allagan.
Yeah.
There's a few other good Munros, because I wouldn't want to do all of them.
No, no.
They're not all that good, are they?
No.
So I've done lots of good ones, but there's still... And I'd like to get them done, but I've got such an intimate knowledge of this place.
Mm.
And it's part of my story, and especially as a photographer, because most photographers go here, there and everywhere.
Mm.
And their body of work consists of a number of disparate images with no connection whatsoever, apart from the fact that everybody else has been to those places too.
Yeah.
So my body of work now has grown into this... It's got narrative.
Yeah.
And it's not only pretty pictures, it's the story of my life here.
Yeah.
It's taken on a deeper significance than just taking photographs.
That's really good to hear, Nick. It is a fantastic place. And I mean, we still go up to Scotland, but we tend to go up sea kayaking or mountain biking rather than hill walking these days. So like you, there are a few hills up that I would like to walk up, but I have this little dilemma of, because I know exactly what it would be like walking up it. I can feel the steps and I can see the views, so I don't really need to do it. So do I want to do it because I want to do it, because I love it? Or do I want to do it because I haven't done it and it's a tick in a book or something?
It's a
dilemma,
one.
Isn't it?
It is, and it's that thing as well. So we're all getting older now. I'm approaching 50.
Yeah, you're looking.
Well, I've had a hard paper round, haven't I? But I'm thinking, this I'm not going to be able to do this forever.
No.
You know, the way my lifestyle is pretty
radical,
do you know what I mean? Yeah. I like a drink. And I don't know how long it's going to carry on for. So will I get to that point where I have to stop and think, oh, blimey, I wish I'd done Anchelach. I wish I'd been up Skern Angillion, you know. I wish I'd done Blarven.
I've been through a similar thing with climbing because I haven't got time to go climbing now because I am, you know, I haven't got that many active years left.
Yeah.
I've got fewer left than I've survived and enjoyed. So I've moved away from the rock climbing, but one of the mental things has taken me 10 years to accept that I'm never going to do some of the climbs I wanted to do. But the only way you can accept that is by understanding there are climbs. However many more climbs you do, there will always be more climbs to do. And I guess it's the same with the mountains, isn't it? If you've done a Torridon mountain, you've kind of been there. Yeah. And the others aren't that different, are they?
So they all look better from... And the other thing is, it's better to be on an ugly mountain looking at a beautiful one than vice versa.
It is, isn't it? Look, on a Lidivower looking at Snowdon rather than on Snowdon looking at a Lidivower. What else is there, Nick, that we need to talk about?
I don't know, we've been going for quite a while now, haven't we?
Okay, well, that's been a really nice little chat, Nick. So
yeah, I didn't know I could carry on. I really could, but
I think we'll leave it there for now. And anybody who wants to spend more time with us is free to do so. So, Nick Livesey, thanks very much for talking to us today.
Cheers, Mike.
And we'll see you again.